its current state on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. According to the 2012 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, nearly 40% of adults with severe mental illness, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and severe depression, received no treatment in the previous year. This comes at an enormous cost to the sufferers and their families, as well as to society at large, to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars annually. Much of our nation's mental health delivery system is based on treating mental illness as the debilitating symptoms, like as psychosis, arise. But our next guest has been a world-renowned pioneer in early intervention. Dr. William McFarlane is a professor of psychiatry at Tufts Medical School and director for the Center for Psychiatric Research at the Maine Medical Center Research Institute. His work has shown that identifying children and young adults who are at a high risk of developing a severe mental illness before the symptoms arise is quite effective. He'll be in town this Thursday to speak at the Hanna Community Center as part of NAMI Lansing's Mental Illness Awareness Week, and he joins us now by phone from Maine. Welcome, Dr. McFarlane.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for your interest and happy to be here.
We're glad you could join us. Is it possible to summarize what you've learned about early intervention and how it can be effective?
Well, Joe, you've actually done that job for me. That was a very good description. The idea is really simple in a way. It's very similar to what we've learned to do with cancer and heart disease, and quite successfully, actually, relatively speaking, in those disorders relative to, say, trying to cure them after they start. So the basic idea is to identify young people, usually somewhere between 10 to 25 in age, who are showing early signs of particularly the psychotic disorders. And so that includes very subtle, very infrequent versions of psychotic symptoms, such as hallucinations or suspicious beliefs or fears. Now, the difference, of course, from heart disease and cancer is this is occurring in young people, and most young people and their families and probably their schools as well consider them sort of at the peak of their health for their whole life, with one obvious exception, and that is this is the age at which major mental illness starts. So the idea is that we've basically trained the guidance counselors, the school health nurses, the college health services, anybody who works closely with this population on a day-to-day basis. We've trained them essentially to pick up these early signs and to very quickly route them to what would many people would consider advanced treatment approaches, but which are really just evidence-based practices that we've been using for decades now.
How much educating still has to be done among professionals?
Well, quite a bit. Although the good news is when we've set up these systems in, we've done now 10 counties or groups of counties across the country. We've just finished our 11th. We've found that the school and college health people, the family practitioners, the pediatricians, the military bases, for instance, have all been very receptive to learning how to do this because they know pretty well what the consequences of missing it can be. I think the big change is the change you described, that is, not thinking of these as inevitably disabling and very serious disorders that essentially take people out of society, but rather treatable illnesses if they're treated early, like we're also doing with HIV now.
Dr. William McFarlane is our guest. He will be in town this Thursday to speak at the Hanna Community Center as part of NAMI Lansing's Mental Health Awareness Week. He's a pioneering researcher in the field of mental health and early detection in particular. Go a little deeper with us, Dr. McFarlane, on the practices here, though. Once you've identified a candidate for a severe mental illness later in life, how exactly do you treat them?
Well, first, there's a very careful, rather lengthy assessment done by interview using a format and an interview schedule that was developed by our colleagues at Yale University, Thomas McGlashan and his colleagues. And then we offer them what we call family-aided assertive community treatment, very long words, But basically, we work with the family to train them what to do, and some of that is counterintuitive. It's not what you think might be helpful.
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, for instance, one of our guidelines is go slow. You know, this is preventable if we don't put too much pressure on this person and kind of steer them gradually in the right direction. So, for instance, at school, we'll ask the school to maybe lower their caseload a bit or give them a special study hall where they're in a quiet place. And then for families to essentially keep them in place as part of the family, and then gradually learn to reduce stresses that crop up inevitably in both family life and particularly for this age group. I think we all remember how stressful adolescence and young adulthood can be. Those things outside in the community that you really can't control. So the family becomes kind of the backbone of all this. We've been a little surprised at how well families do in learning these skills, and also how big an impact they wind up having, even relative to things like antipsychotic medication, which doesn't seem to be all that helpful in this very early stage. Mm.
There are some criticisms out there, though. One is that some kids who are just shy or mildly eccentric may end up being labeled at being at high risk for mental illness. How accurate are the diagnostic tools?
They're getting to be quite accurate. The interview schedule that I just described, for instance, if somebody on that interview schedule is deemed not to be at risk, that's almost 100% accurate. On the positive side, that is, looks like this person might be at risk. Over time, it's about 35-40% at 2 years to 3 years have an episode. One German study, the only one we have really, going long-term, found that about 70% will eventually have an episode over 10 years. So it's accurate enough. That's about as good as we do with some of the cancers. Probably not as accurate as having angina. If you have angina, you've got heart disease. You know, that's 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So we're somewhere in that range. The other thing we do as part of this package of treatment is to work quite intensively with the school, with the college, with the military base, sometimes with pediatricians, to help them know what to do and also to work with us to help this young person stay in school or stay working. The good news is we've just published a major study, 6 sites across the United States. 83% of these young people were in school or working at baseline, and 2 years later, 83% were still in school or working. In other words, outcomes were almost a mirror image of what you'd expect if they'd had a first episode of psychosis.
I'll also point out to our listeners that one of those 6 sites was here in Michigan, in Ypsilanti, Michigan, or Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area. Yeah,
right.
Is there concern over prescribing powerful drugs to kids who may not develop a severe mental illness?
Yes. The tricky part about this is that because these young people often don't have a diagnosis, the doctor really has to rely on symptoms to guide medication choices, if any. One of the good news from the major study, however, is we found that 84% of these young people already have another psychiatric illness, regardless of psychosis, that needs treatment, and it's often picked up early. For instance, bipolar disorder, major depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder, those things are being picked up as well. And their medication can be very helpful, as I think we all know.
We're talking with mental health researcher Dr. William McFarland, who is coming to town here in just a couple of days. Dr. McFarland, how in 2014, then, how widely used are these early intervention techniques here in the United States?
Well, not very widely at all. This is really news. This is really evolving almost while we're talking about it. For instance, there's the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in Washington just gave out 16 grants to 16 states to develop these new programs, and they're just in the process of planning what they're going to do and setting up those services. So it's very new. If people in Michigan haven't heard about this, well, join everybody else. It's really quite new. The only people that have heard a lot about it, of course, are the folks in Ann Arbor, where the program at Washtenaw Community Mental Health Services did a spectacular job of implementing this and had really great results. Of course, Michigan has always been a leader in mental health in this country, so we're not too surprised that they did that again and that there's interest at in Lansing.
And are there particular barriers to more states and local mental health centers, physicians, social workers from adopting these strategies? How do you spread these strategies further?
Well, I think the first is getting past some of the questions that you've asked today and getting past the worry that somehow these young people will be stigmatized. We just haven't had that happen. The stigma is really associated with the diagnosis, particularly schizophrenia. If somebody never has a full-blown psychotic episode, they just don't have schizophrenia. They may have the risk for it, they may have the underlying, but they don't have it in the technical sense. So there's not much basis for stigma. I think the other issue is fears of medication. Those are quite well-founded, and I think we have to be very careful, but also use these drugs when they're really indicated. As if somebody's getting sick. I'm sorry to say this is America. The real barrier is that thing called the dollar. These services are more expensive than would be offered to most people after they've had a first episode, which is usually just medication and maybe a little case management or some therapy. So the package I described is a little more intensive, but the payoff could be really enormous. That is, somebody just doesn't develop a major mental illness. We showed in Portland, Maine, for instance, that was our first site, that's the home of all of this work, that in that area we dropped the incidence of first hospitalizations for psychosis by 34%. In other words, about a third, about one out of three kids didn't have a hospitalization, and most of them progressed back to being citizens, not mental patients.
Wow. Dr. William
stakes are high.
Dr. William McFarland is a professor of psychiatry at Tufts University. He is the director of the Portland Identification and Early Referral Program. And Dr. McFarland will be speaking this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Hanna Center in East Lansing. The event put on by NAMI Lansing is open to the public. Dr. McFarland, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Good luck to you now.